We're 60 days away from the presidential election. That's coming up in November. The roadway to get there is filled with potholes of confusion, abortion, marijuana, all sorts of things. And it makes you wonder, who's the conservative in all this? Today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. I took your line. It is Thursday, September 5th, in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Dang.
Thank you, sir. A lot to get to. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser, Randy Page, all with you today on the program. 60 days away, 60 days, 14 hours, 38 minutes from Election Day. Add some time until the polls open. That clock will continue to move down as our debt clock rises.
The polls have already opened.
That's true.
That's true.
They opened at the time of recording, about 4 hours ago.
So there are states that are already voting, which leads us to a lot of issues. We won't get into that. Guys, we got a couple of different things.
Vote often.
Got a couple of different things here we can go with. Do we want to start with Kamala Harris's CNN interview? Do we want to start with Donald Trump's position on abortion, or do we want to start with Donald Trump's position on marijuana?
Fraught with nuance. All of them.
Let's go with CNN.
All right, let's go with CNN, the worldwide leader in news.
Confusion.
Had an interview with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz about a week ago. Dana Bash was the one who interviewed them, not Jake Tapper, because he could ask hard questions. Dana Bash, pardon. I'm so sorry. This interview was illuminating in that it told me nothing. And it's amazing, gentlemen, that there are people in positions of leadership and in positions of power who can speak for so long and yet say so little, including the vice president now and presidential candidate Kamala Harris. Mitch, when you're running for president, when you eventually run for president, the first question you're going to be asked is, Mr. Prosser, at that point, you'll probably be congressman. That's congressman, weird. What will you do on day one as president of the United States? Now, every presidential candidate has a fever dream of day one.
Yeah.
Donald Trump says, I'll just be a dictator for one day. It was a joke.
Repeal every executive order of my predecessor.
That's number one. So that's the first thing you would do. That's day one.
Yeah,
you make up
like whatever the last guy did. You're going to do better, unless of course you're riding the coattails of the last guy in. And
So day one. I mean, Randy, you've worked in the campaign political world. That's a question that's prepped for before the candidate even announces a run for president.
Absolutely. I mean, that's like asking what's 2 + 2. It equals four.
Okay, good. Thank you. Check me on that.
New math.
New math tells me 5. So Kamala Harris was asked, Vice President Kamala Harris was asked by Dana Bash, I think I'm getting the name right, what would you do on day one? And then CNN's recap says, after a broad claim about focusing on the middle class, Harris made a larger point. Quote, I think sadly in the last decade, we have had in the former president someone who has really been pushing an agenda and an environment that is about diminishing the character and the strength of who we are as Americans, really dividing our nation. And I think people are ready to turn the page on that.
Hmm.
A decade is 10 years. Correct?
Okay. Correct, yes.
So that would put us in 2014. I was a freshman in college in my second semester at the start of that year. The president of the United States in 2014 was?
Barack Obama.
Okay. We had an election in 2016, and that president was?
Donald Trump.
Then we had an election in 2020, and the president now is?
Joe Biden, kind of.
Question mark. Who put the question mark in the prompter? So that's 10 years, three full years was Barack Obama, because he was 2014 to 2017, Inauguration Day. Then Donald Trump for 4 years, so we're 3 to 4. And then Joe Biden's been president for 3 years, almost 4. So for the last decade, which former president is she speaking of? Because I'm under the assumption that her party has been in control of the White House and the Senate
12
for
the last
much
16
for 12 of the last 16 and much of the last decade. So when you're asked a question about what you would do on day one, and you give a mealy mouth, mushy answer where you use the question in the prompt to start your essay, looking at you, sixth graders, to talk about the middle class and how this is at the top of your agenda and it always has been and always will be, and then you go into the former president's divisive, you're not giving the American people what you're calling a new way forward. You're doing the same exact thing that you've always done. And that is, I'm just going to talk around in circles, and eventually I'll land one policy prescription home. And because of that, everyone in the media will go, oh, well, that was great. It was wonderful. She did a great job. Dana Bash, though, you mentioned this. We actually did some show prep and watched the interview beforehand. And that's 16 minutes of my life that I'm never going to get back. But Randy, you mentioned something. And that is that Dana Bash, to her credit, asked some tough questions.
She did.
The problem is she didn't ask the follow-up questions.
That's correct.
What about people who feel groceries were less expensive and housing was more affordable when Trump was president?
Now, That's true.
These are true things. Now, both of those things are true. The opportunity there, the question they leave out here in the recap is that she then asked, do you still think Bidenomics works? A couple of months ago, she says, that's Bidenomics. Bidenomics works, baby. That's what she said. Maybe she left off the baby part. This is what she said in response to this question. Quote, I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%. Stop.
It's core inflation, Justin. Core inflation.
Hold on. 2.4%. That's not even what I'm getting at.
She didn't answer the question.
That's not. That's number one. She did not answer the question.
Number two.
If your strikeout rate, Major League Baseball whiff. Example, if your whiff rate is 60%, now last year it was 30%. And for the first part of this year, it was 60%, and then you get it down to 49%. As a player, in the post-game presser, in the gaggle, in the locker room, the clubhouse, you would say, well, my whiff rate's down.
11 points.
Yeah, but it's up 19 from the year before. So I'm not giving you credit for bringing down something that you drove up.
I need to be unburdened by what has been.
So I can see what can be. The work that we have done to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for seniors. And she goes on to talk about how Donald Trump didn't do that.
Why is that a mainstay talking point? And I understand that insulin is something that many Americans are they need. But why is insulin the mainstay talking point here? Because that's what they continue to go back to. Insulin is just the price has gone up exponentially and we have to have it. And I don't want to get conspiratorial with big pharma and all this kind of stuff. I don't want to do that.
Sure.
Why do they keep going to insulin here? I don't know.
I mean, my gut reaction is that all of us knows someone who uses insulin.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so
that's
it fair. Affects a broad swath of Americans. Sure. And it's and you know the price of drugs is high.
Which she does with the fentanyl thing a little bit later.
Drugs both legal and illegal.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. So the follow-up question, which I thought was a good follow-up from Ms. Bash, was, so is Bidenomics a success? You just laid out several things that you categorize as success. So is Bidenomics a success? Now, here's the problem. Kamala Harris is the vice presidential the presidential nominee, current vice president, who has received not a primary vote. Not a primary vote. Not one. Not one, ever. 2019, she ran for president, didn't get one because Tulsi Gabbard like torpedoed her in a debate, which that's why she's trying to get mics open in the next one. We'll get to that later. So she hasn't received a vote yet politically, the Democratic Party just, I don't even know what word I want to use for what they did to Joe Biden. I don't even know if there's an adequate word that could describe what they did to that man. Whether you appreciate him or like him or not. And so she's asked the question, is Bidenomics a success? She has two options here. She can say yes and run on the record, or she can say no and run away from the record. which do you choose? This is like one of those storybooks, you know, like the Goosebumps books where it's like, if you choose this path, go to page 67. If you choose this path, go to page 45.
Yeah.
Which would you do, Randy, in this situation? Put yourself in Kamala Harris's shoes. How do you answer that question?
They're high heels.
You're running for president.
They're high heels.
I would shoot it right down the middle and not answer the question.
Exactly.
She said, I maintain that when we do the work of bringing down prescription medication for the American people, including capping the cost, the annual cost of prescription medication for seniors at $2,000, when we do what we did in the first year of being in office to extend the child tax credit, that has since expired, so that we cut child poverty in America by over 50%, when we do what we have done to invest in the American people and bringing manufacturing back to the United States so that we created over 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, that number is not true. Bringing business back to America, what we have done to improve the supply chain, well, you ruined it first, and then you made it bad. I don't know. So we're not relying on foreign governments to supply American families with the basic needs. I'll say that's good work. There's more to do, but that's good work. CNN's first statement. There's a lot in that answer. A lot of what? You were asked, is it a success? Yes or no? By the way, we haven't gotten to a single question with Tim Walz.
Have you ever seen when a dog on a dirt road chases a car? And it's solidly chasing that one car, and it's focused on that one car. Have you ever seen a dog chasing one car on a busy city street? It doesn't.
No, they chase multiple.
It's like ADHD on steroids. Sure. I'm not comparing the vice president to a dog in any way, but that's what you see in that answer.
This is what we call a metaphor.
Yeah.
Or a simile. Depending. Whatever. If you liked her ass.
Yeah.
Here's the campaign, and if you're running the former president's campaign, Randy,
the former president, gotta love it.
She was asked the question, "What has made her change her position from 4 years ago on fracking?" She said, "Let's be clear, my values have not changed." You're clipping that, right?
Absolutely.
You're clipping that because she was rated by an independent tracker as the most liberal senator to the left of Bernie Sanders in 2019. And she says here, my values have not changed. She continues on with a bunch of nothing burger answers. They're not good ones. She speaks out of both sides of her mouth on Israel. Typical stuff. She actually met with somebody who has petitioned for an arms embargo on Israel. She says she wouldn't do that. She wants a two-state solution. Nobody in the Middle East wants a two-state solution. It makes no sense. If they did, then Egypt would be allowing people to come in from Gaza. I'm just saying. It doesn't make any sense. Jordan would be doing the same thing. The Hashemite king doesn't want that. Meanwhile, the optics of this, and we're not showing you any clips because you bore you. The setting is awful.
It is.
They're in a coffee shop in Savannah. Nothing wrong with Savannah. Beautiful area. Love it. Love the baseball team. But it's an empty coffee shop. Dana Bash is sitting in the foreground. Kamala brought along Tim Walz. I'm not sure why.
And the bus. The bus is in the background.
The bus is in the background. I'm not sure.
Not in the coffee shop. They did not.
It's through the window. I'm not sure why Governor Walz is with her.
Safety and security blanket.
Emotional support.
Linus drags that blanket everywhere he goes.
What's the reason? Was he supposed to absorb a hard question?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I mean, and really the optics were not great.
There were several problems.
Somebody tries to prep, you know, a stage, you know, to where he looked much larger and more in charge than she did. She looked like, you know, she was way back.
She looked like
much
this.
Shorter.
She is short, by the way. She's 5'4".
She is short. And so you would have thought the campaign team would have, you know, put her up on something else or put her at the foreground versus putting, you know, the governor of Minnesota.
Governor Walz of Minnesota was asked a few questions. Number one, the first question, I'm verbatim, what about you? In regards to first day in office. By the way, who cares what the vice president does first day in office? Go eat a burger. I don't care. Go do whatever you want to do.
Stay alive.
Go live in the residence. What do you want from me? Go tour the executive office building. The next question was a good one. One of the questions was about his son. I thought that was an illuminating question, and I think that those on the right or on the right side of the aisle when watching the DNC were too quick to kick down on that moment, and I think that's actually a good moment, a son proud of his father for reaching a pinnacle of a career.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, when you watch that was one of the more heartwarming portions of the DNC. Granted, I didn't watch a lot of the DNC.
Sure. Well, I can guarantee you
it was exciting, you know, to see that. And unfortunately, I think, you know, we have to remind ourselves that really children of candidates should be off limits.
Yes.
Just agreed.
Totally off limits. And, you know, whether it's right, whether it's left, whether it was, you know, Obama's daughters, whether it was, you know, George W. Bush's daughters.
Or Barron Trump.
Barron Trump, you know, any of them should be off limits.
Right.
You know, really the only time they bring themselves into on limits is when they start talking about policy directly, which none of them, I don't think, have ever done as minors.
As minors, correct. So, yeah, minor children under the age of 18 shouldn't have nothing. And really, I think through college, because we remember the situation with W's children. That's all for Kamala's interview. Nothing happened. I think the interview in totality ran 40. They had 48 minutes of tape. They produced like 18. Where's the other 30? Nothing comes out of it, and now she doesn't have to do an interview again. I did my one interview. I did it with CNN. They pressed me on some hard questions. Hopi Changey Joy, Joyful Warriors, and we move on. So all's good. Don't have to worry about it anymore. Meanwhile, and I want you to be sure to understand that we just talked about the vice president and the Democrat presidential nominee, and you might have really been like listening to this in your car or on your phone or your Alexa as you're folding clothes, and you're like, yeah, go get them. You might not like this next part. Former President Donald Trump has woven himself into a pretzel on the issue of abortion. And this is, and again, I will say this. You can actually go back on this show probably about a year and a half ago when I said he was the most consequential president on the pro-life issue we've ever seen. And I still wager that to be the case because of the three Supreme Court justices that eventually their decisions overturned Roe and sent the issue back to the states. I still think that's a thing. However, I don't know who is advising the Republican candidate for president to moderate on abortion. They need to stop. They need to stop. Because you can moderate somewhat, and I understand the need to moderate when it comes to getting those swing state votes. I'm looking at the map here. Suburban moms in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Arizona and Nevada. Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia. I get that. I do. But be someone of conviction. Like, do you have a stance? If you had to articulate the stance of the former president on the issue of life, could you? I have a three-word stance, but I'll save it for the end.
Yes. It would take some time to process it in a way that could be finally articulated, but it's been nuanced at best and I think problematic at worst. I think he, you know, and there's this tension in the conservative movement. For those of you that are listening to this, maybe in your, well, he's solidly pro-life. No, he's not. And historically, he hasn't been either. In fact, I believe, what year was that we looked at earlier? 2008, something like that. It was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. He probably proclaimed himself to be pro-choice.
There's 1999.
I'll meet the press. That's right, with Russell. Yep. There is a tension in the conservative movement right now of whether he is listening to advisors or whether he is Lone Ranger, if he has gone rogue or maverick or whatever cool word you want to use for it. I tend to believe that he is listening to some polling data, some of the advice of presidential candidate helpers, if you will, advisors, whatever. And then he's extrapolating that to fit his own opinion. So he may be forcing some of the data and what other people are saying into what he already believes and then kind of stretching that out. that leads to a jumbled mess when it comes to finally articulating a stance, let alone a worldview. I mean, I think he's all over the place. And some of those people that are advising him would be considered friends of the conservative movement. They're not. They're not.
Randy, when you look at the former president's answers on abortion, because it's a big issue, I think the Harris-Walz campaign has made it a central issue. They're gonna win on this. They've visited a couple Planned Parenthood since they became the nominees. When you're looking at a person who is trying to gain the conservative vote, because I don't believe the Democratic Party is trying to gain the conservative vote. If they did, they'd have a conservative platform. We talked about the Republican Party platform. For pro-lifers, and we'll get into the specifics here in just a second, what should pro-life voters be looking for in a candidate? Is it I am staunchly here, or should they be looking for somebody who's willing to move a little bit on the issue?
Yeah, as someone who actually served on the platform committee for the RNC, you know, this was an issue that was argued both in the committee I served on and then generally. And I think, you know, so often it's easy to forget what we're talking about. You know, that abortion sounds like such a sterile term.
Abstract. Yeah.
Yes. That we're talking about innocent human life.
That's right.
And I think as you think through that with the lens of a biblical worldview, it really changes a whole lot on the political side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, you know, back in the early 90s when then State Representative David Beasley introduced the Human Life Protection Act, which was, for its time, way ahead of its time. But it really set some strong, bright lines in the sand. And, you know, we've seen many of those, you know, victories over the years as we've incrementally kind of, you know, moved forward here in South Carolina to where we now have a heartbeat bill. And so I think, you know, it is very difficult to define where the Republican nominee is on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what is creating confusion.
Right.
Is, you know, if you look at the platform, and you listen to the former president, he says he's against late-term abortion. That's probably about the only thing that I think he's been super consistent on, although he has not really defined, you know, is that 15 weeks, is that 20 weeks? You know, what does that entail?
Right.
And then I think for those of us who understand policies like this, you know, at 15 weeks, the largest percentage of abortions have taken place at that point. And so it's like, what are we protecting?
Right.
And so, you know, it concerns me as an American, mm-hmm. as a Christian, as a Republican, to kind of see this drift, you know, on this particular issue. And frankly, I think in, you know, you look at some of the 10 states that are considering amendments right now, you know, whether, you know, in Florida is probably the one that's out mm-hmm. front the most.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thankful for, you know, the leadership of Governor DeSantis.
Yeah.
You know, his cabinet, you know, numbers of members of the congressional delegation, you know, state senators, state house members that have really gotten out there to talk about not only is it, you know, against life, but it's really deceptively written in so many ways,
right.
You know, that takes it, you know, like, I think vast majorities of Americans would say they believe that if a minor child is considering abortion, that there should be parental consent. I think that if you look at vast majorities of Americans would say there should be some limits. It shouldn't just be totally unlimited.
Sure.
I think vast majorities of Americans would say the taxpayer funding of abortion is wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, as we look at those issues, Because obviously in a state like Florida, you know, yes, it's got a Republican majority, but I don't know that there's a pro-life majority there. Mm-hmm. So I think using some of those messaging points to speak to the moms who go, you know what? If my 14-year-old goes and gets an abortion without my consent, I got a problem with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think most Americans do.
There are 10 states that have an abortion amendment or some form of abortion legislation, amendment, whatever, on their ballot in November. Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, Nebraska, South Dakota, Montana, Missouri, Florida, Maryland, and New York. I would keep an eye on Arizona, and I would keep an eye on Florida. Of those states, and Nevada, those are three states that can truly impact a presidential election. Donald Trump came out and said that he would vote in favor of Amendment 4 in Florida, which Amendment 4 would establish
constitutional
right to abortion. He said that as positing that 6 weeks is too early. He's always been against the heartbeat bill in Florida, and any heartbeat bill for that matter, saying that it's too early and it's wrong and blah, 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 blah. And he's wrong. Categorically, he's wrong. Period. Full stop, as the politicians like to say today. However, he got calls immediately and in 24 hours flipped that position. I'm looking at a political article. Susan B. Anthony, President Marjorie Dannenfelser, FRC President Tony Perkins, Kellyanne Conway, a former pollster and former Trump senior counselor. She's the first female to get a president across the finish line in an election. And Senator Lindsey Graham all said, no. You're not voting against the six-week bill, sir. You are voting to open up a constitutional right to abortion. And this goes to my next point. Please read the amendment changes or the provisions on your ballot.
Yes.
And if you have questions about them, call us. We'll help you. We'll walk you through it because it's kind of part of what we do. So he had a fundamental misunderstanding there, for sure.
The word from the back room is that another person actually had a lot of influence on the president and those advising him, and that was Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk probably was able to speak some truth to the president and his team to help them understand that that statement in and of itself was at least problematic, if not detrimental to his case and the case of many of those states. I brought something up to a couple of thought leaders, and I'll ask y'all, I think we've bandied it about at some point in the past. Is it possible, you know, I'm crazy, I know.
Agreed.
Correct.
Is it possible, though, that Trump is simply a cultural barometer of where the country actually is?
I mean, there's no question that, you know, and I think, you know, Mueller even mentioned this morning on, you know, his podcast, is that, you know, for a number of years, the pro-life movement had been making just incredible strides legislatively, that, frankly, I think we thought we were winning in a lot of places where we just were not winning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, some of these, you know, early votes that came very quickly. The pro-life movement isn't exactly the world's fastest to coalesce. And then you also had a number of, you know, out-of-state interests.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, you know, an abortion lobby in Planned Parenthood that they've got a financial incentive to boost this up because it helps their bottom line. And so we don't have that on the on the pro-life side. So but yeah, I mean, I think culture definitely has shifted on this. And you know, I think you've got, you know, as I talked to some of, you know, young people, in some respects, some of the young people I talk to are more conservative than my peers who are in their 50s.
Sure.
And so because they've been brought up, they've seen these ultrasounds.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, I remember when my children were born, and I looked at it, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I
you could hear what you say. You could see this blah, yeah.
But, you know, when it's in 3 and 4D,
yeah,
there is no wiggle room to say, that is a child.
Right.
It's a child.
I think there is a situation in the United States where I don't really think it's a misunderstanding of what we're talking about. I personally do not believe that it is just, it's just a woman's right to choose. And that's all pandering and bumper sticker pabulum. At the end of the day, yes, vast majority know what it is. And it is a I can control my own life and you can't do anything about it. And I have disregard. I would rather go work in a cubicle making widgets than I would having a child. Ron DeSantis in an event yesterday, rallying support against Amendment 4, said if you care about building a culture of life in this state or this country, I'll get to this in a second, then winning in Florida, I think, really represents the end of the pro-life movement, end quote. Amendment 4 is the amendment. It would bar lawmakers from establishing an abortion ban before a fetus is viable. It would undo the current fetal heartbeat bill. It also allows for abortions in the case of health of the mother, including mental health.
Which is
broad and not defined.
Yeah, incredibly broad.
And that can be determined by the patient's health care provider, also not defined. We don't know what that means. It needs 60% to pass. I'll put it this way. And I said this, and you remember this. I think you remember this. I gave free advice to every candidate for president of the United States. You can get the pro-life vote very simply by saying, I want to build a culture of life in this country, period.
Yeah. I'll go back to the question, and I'll put what I think is my spin of an answer on it. Trump has prided himself on being a guy that visited Kansas and Missouri and Nebraska and Colorado and San Diego, South Dakota SD. Yeah. Looking at a map right now. All these flyover states. Mm-hmm. And he's every man. He's not every man. Okay. He's a multi-billionaire. This my friend from Alabama would say he's a gozillionaire.
Yeah. But he has an uncanny ability to connect to the
everyman. But he connects to the everyman. He is a savvy politician in that he reads polling. He understands. He connects. He knows what people are feeling. Yeah, I can feel your pain. I think he's onto it. Whether I disagree, I think he is correctly diagnosing where the American people are. That just means that we in the pro-life movement have to do a better job of, to your point, Justin, telling people, and to your point, this is exactly what we're talking about. We're not talking about some, amorphous cluster of cells, according to Chief Justice Beatty.
Former Chief Justice Beatty.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to pay a little deference as I use his words to my favor. Thank you, Chief Justice. I think we've got to be more clear, more precise, more helpful in the way we talk about it.
So there's a lack of all that to say. There's a very wide lack of conservative vision on the issue of life. But not only that, we will not get into the intricacies of IVF today, or whether you're for or against it. All I will say is it is appalling to me that both candidates on both sides of the aisle have decided, you know what, the way I'm going to win this election is just give you more money.
They found the money tree.
Kamala Harris has said, I'm going to give you $25,000 for a down payment on a home. Really? For a down payment, really?
She took a page right out of the playbook, though, because you remember student loan debt forgiveness. We got you.
That's one Biden plank that worked. And Donald Trump says that, well, I think we should federally subsidize IVF.
Or mandate it.
Now, again, we won't get into that. At some point, the federal government can't subsidize everything. Question mark?
They can.
Should they?
But, yeah.
And in a post on Truth Social this past Saturday.
Well aren't we in debt, too?
Who cares?
According to a former vice president, now president, kind of, once said that a nation's wealth is actually determined by its debt while he was visiting China.
So we're actually more powerful now economically because we have more debt.
Deeper in debt.
Go home and try that one out.
Alec Murdoch would agree.
Honey, we are $20,000 in the hole in the bank account, but that means we're wealthy. in a post on Truth Social this past Saturday, Donald Trump made another position abundantly clear, where he will back a constitutional amendment, Amendment Number 3 in Florida, that would legalize recreational marijuana for adults.
Recreational?
Legalize recreational marijuana for adults.
Oh, because they already have medicinal.
Yes. Isn't it interesting that medicinal always leads to...
Wait. No, it does not.
I've been told...
Who told you that?
I was told for a couple years now. How dare
you use the slippery slope argument?
Donald Trump said, whether people like it or not, I'm not doing my impression, this will happen through the approval of the voters, so it should be done correctly.
Populism at its finest.
We need the state legislature to responsibly create laws that prohibit the use of it in public spaces so we do not smell marijuana everywhere we go like we do in many of the Democrat-run cities. I'll tell you a quick story.
Yes, thank you.
We were at the March for Life a couple years ago, and we were invited to a dinner the night before the march. Mitch and I and our wives were there, awesome. And we got to meet Tim Tebow. We got to meet Tim Tebow. Cool. I crashed my wife's picture. She's still not happy about that.
His arms are as big as my head, and that's huge.
And so it was actually at Trump Hotel.
It's a big, beautiful motel.
Gold everywhere.
Hotel.
It's the second tallest building you can actually see.
They'll leave the light on for you. Yeah. And so we leave it, and as soon as you leave it in Washington, D.C., do you know what smell hits me? It wasn't the cherry blossoms.
In the face.
Wasn't the cherry blossoms. It was the marijuana. It was the devil's lettuce. The California cumin. Anyway.
Left-handed cigarettes.
I have an issue here, and I'm just going to posit this statement before we move on, because we do have to move on. We have to wrap this thing up. You cannot have a conservative marijuana bill. You cannot have a conservative piece of legislation involving the legalization of marijuana in any way, whether medicinal or recreational. Those two things don't go together. Correct? Am I on the right track? Does conservatism and use of drugs go together?
We already have one here in the state of South Carolina. We already have a conservative law. It's called Right to Try. And I know that it's, you know, well, it doesn't cover what we need it to cover. Yeah, that's because you want full rec. recreational use, that is. There is a right to try novel medicine that is not currently approved by the FDA, prescribed by a doctor and issued by a licensed pharmacist. I got all three right this time.
Good job.
It is in state code, and it is possible for people to use. There are two products currently on the market that both have THC, levels of THC, to help people with seizures and those suffering the side effects of chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. Those are already on the market. So it's possible, but the proliferation of marijuana is not conservative. That's my third look into the camera today.
So the question begs before we get to polling.
Oh, here you go.
Where's the conservative? We got both wanting to blow out the spending. Both are at different levels of support of abortion. Both are supportive of the use of marijuana recreationally, as Vice President Harris once said when she was campaigning for president. I inhaled.
But
she locked all the people up after that. I'll just posit that question as a hypothetical before we get to polling. Where's the conservative? Now, we are 60 days away from Election Day. If you've been to Palmetto Family's Instagram, or you've seen it when you're mindlessly scrolling in the evening, before you go to bed or when you wake up, you might have seen our president, Dr. Steve Pettit, talking about the need to register to vote. It's important that you do that. Go to scvotes.gov. Check your voter registration status. And if you're listening to us and you're under the age of 18, first of all, kudos to you. You're more knowledgeable than any of your peers. But if you're going to turn 18 before November 5th, and you're just 17 now, you can still register to vote.
That's right.
And you can vote in your first presidential election when you turn 18. I actually wasn't able to vote in my first presidential election until several years after I turned 18, just because of how the calendar falls. But let's look at polling in the election that you're going to vote in. I don't look at nationwide polling. I look at battleground polling, because no offense to our friends in South Dakota, or even California until it flips red. They're never going to decide an election.
Or South Carolina.
Or South Carolina, but your vote does matter. But we are not a battleground state outside of the primary. According to RCP's average of polling, this is through today. Arizona, Trump, plus one. Nevada, Harris, plus 0.6. Wisconsin, Harris, plus 1.4. Michigan, Harris, plus 0.1. It is a tie in Pennsylvania. North Carolina, Trump, plus 0.7. And in Georgia, Harris, plus 0.1. You know what that tells me?
All within the scientific margin of error.
All within the scientific margin of error. So you know what that means? This could very well be, you know, Harris plus 3.2 or Trump plus 3.2.
It's precincts.
It is a tie. And Mitch ran the numbers before we jumped on the air here.
I think there are three states, and I've narrowed it down to three. I think there are three states that will determine this election. Everybody's saying seven. Some are saying 10. Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Georgia. Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Georgia. I think all three of those states combined, because if you flip them either way, it's a win for either side. Is that to say that Virginia is locked up? No. Is North Carolina locked up? No. Michigan, for all of you eternal optimists, conservative eternal optimists out there, don't hold your breath. Wisconsin, I feel the same. Nevada, I don't know. I'm marking it blue right now. I've got North Carolina red, Virginia blue, Michigan blue, Nevada blue, and currently I've got Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania red for a count of 281 for Trump and Vance and 257 for Waltz and Harris. But, y'all, I'm going to play for just a second.
There's your flip.
Yeah.
Georgia and Arizona.
Georgia, Arizona, and it's a landslide if Vice President Harris takes all three.
Randy, I just pulled up to Mitch's point about Michigan. Donald Trump did win Michigan in 2016.
He did.
And he won it by point, quick math on the air is not smart, 0.23%. When you're looking at these battleground states and you're looking at the issues we just talked about, or I believe we have two candidates who leave a lot to be desired. They're like Iowa's offense. You just leave a lot to be desired. And you're looking at these battleground states.
Slight.
Republicans haven't won Minnesota.
In forever.
And Georgia's now purple.
Ish.
Lean Ish. Red.
Right.
Virginia might be in play. Right. Yeah. Virginia might be in play. North Carolina should be in play. Arizona might swing blue, especially because of some of the down ballot races in the Senate, for example, that you're just not running good candidates, in my opinion. We're at a point in our nation where over the next 60 days, I don't know if this is the most important election of our lifetimes. I'm not here to say that. But I will say it might be one of the closest between two candidates who don't inspire a lot of confidence on either of their sides.
Right.
So when we're looking at these maps, and the folks at home might not look at these, and we tell them we're looking at them. When the folks at home start looking at the maps and start reading the headlines and listening to the news stories as we approach the end of September and the beginning of October, and now all the debates have happened, and now we're full throttled November 5th, how do we view this election?
I think you've summed it up well. I mean, I think there are those on the right who, you know, keep trying to say that Trump's got this all locked up. He doesn't.
No.
There are those on the left who says Kamala's got it all.
No, she does not.
She does not. Yeah. It really is going to be super, super, super tight. And, you know, the interesting thing is I think there's always so much looking at a presidential race. But when you think about the U.S. Senate, the U.S. Congress, state Senate, state House, school board, you know, all of these races that are down ballot that affect you as much, if not more in some respects, that just, you know, really necessitates, I think, get out and vote. And if your state, you know, South Carolina uses early voting, Early vote. You know, you don't have to wait till the day off. And so I think, you know, with us being 60 days out, you've got 30 days to register to vote. So we're at the 30-day mark.
Right.
And so, you know, do those voter registration drives, you know, in churches, at your companies, you know, wherever you do them, and then make sure people get out and vote, because I really do think, you know, as Justin has said, it's going to be tight presidentially. Right. In South Carolina, it won't be tight presidentially, but it could be tight on some down ballot races that just really need people to show up. And so, you know, just really, you know, my parting word is, you know, exercise the right to vote, because people have shed a lot of blood to give you that right.
That's right.
So exercise it.
Last time a Republican candidate won a presidential race in Minnesota was?
1972, Richard Nixon. And before that, my guy, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 56 and 52. You have to go back to Herbert Hoover.
But Republicans were on a roll.
Yeah, it was a Republican state. Yeah. Abraham and Lincoln.
Minnesota switched with Roosevelt.
Yeah.
That's your news for the day. Except for one thing that just broke 2 hours ago, according to Axios. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Thursday that he wants Vice President Kamala Harris to win the election in November, but it will be up to the American people. That's all the time we have for you on the show today. If you want to learn more about Palmetto Family, go to palmettofamily.org. You might be surprised by what you see when you hit the enter key on your keyboard. But take a look. Peruse.
It's pretty.
Peruse the website, maybe, and just give it a look. If you want to get involved in terms of supporting the work that we do here, you can do that. Click on that donate button on palmettofamily.org, and you can do that with a one-time or monthly, weekly, daily, however you want to do it.
So people can give to Palmetto Family monthly?
Sure. Absolutely.
Recurring?
Recurring gift.
Interesting.
Recurring gift.
Pretty cool.
We appreciate that, because what we do here takes all of us, and your support is vital to that. If you want to catch more of the show, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get those, you can just scroll down and listen to all of them. These date back to August of 2021. So we've been doing this for quite some time, and you're the reason why it's the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state. So all I ask of you is, whether you're watching on YouTube or X or listening on one of the audio only platforms, hit that subscribe button. I just mentioned donating to the organization, but let me let you know a little secret. The show is free. So, all you need to do is just click subscribe. That's all you have to do. 5-star rating and review will be helpful. Sharing it with your friends and family will be the ultimate, because we do believe in recruiting around here. And so we want you to recruit and follow the program that way. All the time we got for you. Enjoy your college football weekend. As always, I love saying that in the fall. It's so much fun. I never do, because I'm a South Carolina fan. But I hope you enjoy yours. And we will be back here next week, because next week's a big deal. Debate week. Tuesday, September 10th. Kamala Harris v. Donald Trump. Live. ABC. David Muir. Let's go. Let's have some fun. We'll talk about all of that and a conversation with another congressman coming up next week. But that's all for this edition of the show. For Randy Page, for Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina.
This one.
It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show.